As Unitarian Universalists, we share a commitment to grow the fullness of our spirits together. And so we lift up and celebrate many journeys, many cultures, and many spiritualities. And we do so imperfectly, but we keep trying, we keep listening, and we keep learning. This past Tuesday, February 17th, was a new moon, and it just so happened to mark two really important events for billions of people around the world, respectively. One of these was the beginning of Ramadan, which is Islam's holy month of fasting, prayer, reflection, and community. For many of our Muslim friends, this is a time of appreciation, gratitude, and coming together. For everyone observing Ramadan this month, happy Ramadan. And this year, the same new moon last Tuesday also marked the Lunar New Year, which is also known as the Spring Festival. And for many societies of East and Southeast Asia and their worldwide diasporas, including Korea, Vietnam, and China, this festival is the most significant traditional holiday of the year. Lunar New Year festivities traditionally last 15 days until the first full moon of the year, and each year is represented by one of the 12 zodiac signs, with this year being the year of the horse, which is a symbol of liveliness and spirit and excellence. So today in this service, we'll have an opportunity to delve a little bit deeper into those themes. And while the Lunar New Year is observed in many different ways across many different cultures, regions, localities, families, and even individuals, its many variations often feature a common wish for hope and togetherness and new beginnings. So may we share in that spirit today. Gongxi, gongxi. Happy Year of the Horse. The horse across cultures is a symbol of excellence. Speed, power, grace, endurance. As the Bola story that we heard earlier reminds us, the horse is a symbol that can represent the very epitome of what a living being can be. And there's something fitting about welcoming the Year of the Horse right now in this season of new beginnings, because the question the horse puts to us is one we often ask ourselves at the turn of a new year. What does it mean to be excellent? What does it mean to live a truly good life that we aspire to? And I think for most of us in this room, the answer comes fairly naturally. What makes a human life excellent is not wealth or fame or power or material goods. It's something deeper. It's our character. Or to use an older way of saying it, it's our virtue. It's the kind of person we are. Our courage, our integrity, our compassion, our wisdom. This is what the ancient Chinese called de, moral power. It's what the ancient Greeks called arete, the inner excellence that makes a life genuinely worth living. Across cultures and millennia, wise ones arrived at the same deep conviction. What matters most is not what we achieve, but who we are. And this, naturally, is what this season of new beginnings is for. Yes, it's the Lunar New Year, but also it's a time in our local natural world here in the San Francisco Bay Area when it undergoes renewal and rebirth. After a long period of rain and the deep watering of the soil, now is a time of lengthening daylight and the germination of seeds. The Chinese philosopher Mencius had this image. He said that every human being is born with moral sprouts called duan, these budding capacities for kindness, for conscience, for consideration, for wisdom. And if you've been outside in San Francisco lately, you've seen things actually sprouting right now. New green that's pushing up through the soil, the first signs of spring. And so fittingly, this is the time that we affirm the sprouts of our own capacity for virtue. At the organization where I serve as founding director, the San Francisco Contemplarium, we recently held our winter ingathering to honor this very threshold, this turning point between winter's quiet incubation and spring's first stirrings. We gathered for an afternoon of reflection and connection, working with this idea that the rainy season has been a time for rooting and quiet preparation and gestation beneath the soil, and that now as daylight grows, as days grow longer, something new is ready to germinate. And at this winter ingathering, we did a ritual where each of us had a small pot of soil representing everything that has made us who we are so far, the stories and the places and the people that have shaped us. And then we each took a pinchful of poppy seeds, California native poppy seeds, and we sprinkled them into that soil, with these seeds representing the kind of person we choose to become, growing and sprouting, but rooted in that soil. And we shared what those seeds meant to us in small groups, and it was a powerful thing to name out loud in the company of others who each of us is choosing to be. Because it is our choice. Yes, we exist within the soil of what has come before, but each new day we ask ourselves, or we tell ourselves, this is the person I choose to be. I choose to be more patient. I choose to be more generous. I choose to be more courageous. I choose to live according to my values. My virtue is in my hands. And so at this threshold of the year, we honor that sacred truth that it's we who choose who we become. And yet, I want to be honest with you about something I've been noticing in myself. Over these past few years, living through what we've been living through, the cruelty being enacted at the highest levels of power, the daily assaults on the dignity of the most vulnerable, the sheer relentlessness of it all, I've noticed something that troubles me. It's not just that the world around me feels more broken, it's that I can feel that brokenness working on me, on the inside. I notice myself becoming more cynical than I used to be, than I want to be, more reactive, quicker to write people off. I catch myself doom scrolling for an hour when I meant to spend 10 minutes. I notice my compassion narrowing, feeling it strongly for people I agree with and struggling to extend it to people I don't. I find myself reaching for contempt more easily than I used to, or find myself responding to cruelty with cruel feelings of my own. I don't think I'm alone in this. I think many of us, if we're honest, have felt something similar. Not a dramatic moral collapse, nothing so obvious as that, but something more like erosion, like a slow wearing down, a gradual coarsening that happens despite our values, despite our intentions, despite our resolutions in the new year. And so this is what seems incomplete when we say we choose who we want to be, that sometimes the talk of character or virtue seems to imply, this idea that virtue is simply a personal project, a matter of individual willpower and commitment. Because if that were the whole story, then a demoralizing environment shouldn't be able to degrade my character. I should just be able to decide to be compassionate and stay compassionate, regardless of what's happening around me. But that's not how it works. Not for me, and I suspect not for most of us. Thinking back to those seeds that we planted at that ritual for the winter ingathering, we placed them carefully into the soil. We named who we wanted to become. But we all know that a seed doesn't grow just because you planted it with the best of intentions. A sprout is not a tree. A sprout is fragile. A sprout is responsive to conditions. If it gets sunlight and water, then it grows. If it doesn't, if the soil is dry, if the air is harsh, if nobody tends to it, it can wither. Not because it wasn't real, but because it needed something that it didn't get. Mencius's moral sprouts are the same. Those capacities for virtue and character are real. They are in us. But they're not invulnerable. They need tending. And the truth is that the world we are living in right now is not a world that tends to our moral sprouts. It's a world that in many ways deprives our spirits of water and sunlight. So here's a contradiction I find myself in, and maybe you do too. On the one hand, I believe that I have agency in who I become, that I can live into my qualities of character and virtue. But on the other hand, I can feel my own moral capacities being worn down by conditions, by a world I didn't choose and I can't fully control. If virtue is a personal project, I should be able to do it alone. But I can't. And I suspect most of us can't either. So what do we do? This is where I remember the story that we heard this morning, the story of Zhou Fanggao. Remember, the Duke thought that Zhou Fanggao was incompetent because he got all the visible details wrong. Yellow instead of black, mare instead of stallion, the surface markers. But the horse judge, Bo La, saw something completely different. He saw that Zhou Fanggao had learned to perceive the inner spirit of the horse, in Chinese, the tianji, and to let go of everything else. And the horse he found turned out to be the finest in the land. I've been thinking about this story, and what strikes me most is not just what Zhou Fanggao was able to see, but it's what his seeing did. The horse's excellence was real before Zhou Fanggao found it. It existed, but it was unknown, it was unnamed, hidden somewhere, pulling a cart. Without Zhou Fanggao, without someone who could look past the surface to the essential, to the tianji, that excellence would have never entered the world. The act of recognition is what made the horse's excellence real in any way that mattered. And I think this act of recognition might help us to answer the contradiction that we find ourselves in. Yes, virtue is personal. It really is about my inner character, and I really do have agency in who I become. But virtue is not solo. I cannot sustain it alone, especially not in harsh conditions. What I need, and what we all need, is what Zhou Fanggao's horse had. We need people who can see that moral substance in us and name it. People who can look past all of the surface noise, all of the cynicism, and all of the coarsening and say, I see good in you. That good is real, and it matters. I think about a friend of mine who told me once that for most of his almost 3 decades of secular life, no one had ever told him that moral deliberation, actually sitting down and thinking carefully about right and wrong, was a real and important thing to do, something worth spending time on. That moral seriousness was in him the whole time. The sprout was there. But nobody had ever been his Zhou Fanggao. Nobody had looked at that quality and said, this is excellent. This is important. And that absence had an impact. It left him isolated in his moral life, unsure whether his instinct to take these things seriously was naive or weird. When someone finally names it, when someone says, this matters, and the fact that you care about it is genuinely good, that changes something. Not because it puts something new into him, but because it recognizes what's already there. And that recognition is what helps it to grow. I think this is what we owe each other, especially now, especially in a world that doesn't water our sprouts. We owe each other the Zhou Fanggao kind of seeing, the deep seeing, past the cynicism, past the reactivity, past all those ways that we've been coarsened, to the moral substance that is still in us. And not just seeing it silently, but naming it, saying it out loud. You were kind, and I noticed. You chose integrity when it cost you something, And I saw that. You extended compassion to someone who didn't make it easy to do so. And that matters. Yes, it can feel corny to say these things. But this is the mechanism by which virtue, by which goodness survives under hostile conditions. Mencius's sprouts don't need a perfect world. They don't need a political paradise. They need a Jiu Fang Gao. They need someone who sees them and tends to them. And we can be that for each other. The Confucian tradition, along with our Unitarian Universalist tradition, understands something that our society can sometimes forget. To be a human is to be in community. It's to be in relationship with other human beings. And to be an excellent human is to be excellently in community. To be in the kind of community that cultivates goodness in each other by recognizing it, by naming it, by calling it forth. We don't become good alone. We become good together. And in the hardest of times, in the coldest of winters, we help each other stay good together. At the end of our winter ingathering at the San Francisco Contemplarium, we did a final ritual. Each of us took a small cup of water. Each of us spoke into it a gift that we bring to the community, a quality of ours that we offer to those around us. Patience, understanding, commitment. And then one by one, we poured our water into a large shared vessel in the middle of the room. And then, from that communal vessel, filled with everyone's gifts, we each drew the water to water each of our own individual pots and poppy seeds. It was such a simple act, but I found it moving, because that's exactly it. That's exactly what we're meant to do, isn't it? The water that helps your sprout grow doesn't come from you alone. It comes from the people around you, from their seeing, from their naming, from their gifts poured out and offered. And your water, in turn, is part of what helps someone else's seed to grow. We tend to each other. That's how the sprouts survive. So here's my invitation on these first days of the Year of the Horse. Yes, set your aspirations for this year. Yes, recommit to the person that you want to become. Personal agency, your capacity to choose who you are, is real and it matters and it makes a difference. But don't try to do it alone. Look for the moral substance in the people around you. The quiet courage, the stubborn integrity, the compassion that persists. And when you see it, say so. Be someone's Jiu Fang Gao this year. See the excellence that the world is missing and needs. Name it. And in so doing, help it to grow. Because in a time like ours that deprives our spirits of sunlight and water, the most important thing we can do is tend to each other's sprouts. That's what it means to be truly, excellently human. Not alone, but together. Gongxi, gongxi, congratulations. Happy New Year of the Horse. May it be so.
The Lunar New Year of the Wood Snake has just concluded as I move on from my role as a biotech professional, a position where progress tends to be gradual, valued for traits like patience, introspection, and meticulousness. With the arrival of the Fire Horse year, I view my transition into semi-retirement as a liberating chance to rekindle my activist spirit, promoting resistance through love and joy. In accordance with a Chinese astrologer's forecast, the Year of the Horse is expected to bring significant changes for those born in the Year of the Dog, like me. Having worked diligently and patiently over the past year to build UU Black, Indigenous, People of Color, or BIPOC community in California and globally, through active leadership in the diverse revolutionary UU Multicultural Ministry, or DRUM, in California, and the UU Church of the Philippines Cebu Fellowship Formation Project, I believe the Year of the Horse will offer support and resources to further strengthen and grow these foundational efforts. I have to admit that recognition and well-earned progress can sometimes make me uncomfortable in leadership roles, as I see myself more as a team player, collaborator, or group member, one of the pack. My discomfort with being seen as a leader might originate from my experience in various organizations where leaders often engage in unhealthy behaviors, such as deception and avoiding conflict, to achieve their goals. Tactics that, according to Sun Tzu in The Art of War, can lead to success. The question is, should I trust the astrologer's prediction about a significant life change in the year of the fire horse? Perhaps I should avoid relying on astrology for my life decisions. Or maybe I need to remember that throughout my adult years, major changes have often coincided with the year of the horse. In 1978, I chose medical technology as my college major, which laid the foundation for my long career in biotech. In 1990, I moved to Japan for a work assignment. And since then, I've been involved in international business across North America, South America, Asia, Middle East, Australia, and Africa. And in 2002, my newly formed family moved into a renovated home in San Francisco, which still remains to be our residence. And in 2014, the lawsuit challenging Ohio's ban on same-sex marriage appeared before the U.S. Supreme Court, ultimately leading to the court ruling that same-sex marriage is legal in 50 states. Julie and I were legally married by Reverend John Behrens the following year. Looking back at those major changes in my life during the horse years, I realized that my hard work and patience truly paid off. Those periods mark a consistent pattern of positive outcomes, and I am committed to embracing this important life change and stepping into a leadership role on my own terms. I aim to connect more deeply with my allies and be actively involved in my intersectional communities. During the last fire horse year, which was in 1966, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered the Ware Lecture, passionately urging the UUA to challenge the status quo, combat social injustice, and serve as moral leaders. In the 1966 GA committed to ending discrimination and segregation in all UU congregations. It was a time for growth for the UUA, and it was marked by the dedications of new buildings associated with young congregations in many locations. In the world beyond the UU faith, 1966 embodied the themes of the fire horse year: rapid change, bold transformation, and high energy shifts. That year saw the founding of the Black Panther Party and the National Organization for Women. Civil rights leaders, including MLK Jr., took part in the March Against Fear from Memphis to Jackson, Mississippi to support Black voter registration. Mao launched the Cultural Revolution in China, and while the Vietnam War escalated, sparking widespread protests across many US cities. As we mark this year of the firehouse, I anticipate similarly intense period filled with dynamic yang energy. Perhaps you do too. Regardless of whether you were born in the year of the dog, I invite everyone to embrace your leadership qualities and act swiftly on longstanding projects rather than waiting for the ideal conditions. After all, I probably won't be around for the next Fire Horse year in 2086, so I plan to seize the moment and make every day of this year meaningful.